Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. And we all know that putting in some new windows or a new door can be really exciting, but it can be a little intimidating because sometimes you don't even know where to begin. Let me help you out. First of all, you got to go with Pella. That's a given. And there are a couple directions you can go to get things started. First of all, you can schedule a free in-home consultation. That's right, free. You're going to be able to get a Pella expert out to sit down with you, look at your home, and they're going to be able to get a Phil Jackson triangle offense-esque game plan for you that fits your budget, your wants, and your needs. That's one option. Or you can head out to the showroom. Showroom's really cool, man. Sometimes it helps to actually see the window, see the door, open it, close it to get a better feel for exactly what you are going to be putting into your home. So the showroom is a great place to go as well. Any direction you go, just know that Pella can provide window and door solutions to any home. And you're going to be with some great people as well. Give them a call, 402-493-1350. That's 493-1350. Check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. All right. It is the finale of The Last Dance, episodes 9 and 10. Tons to dive into. This was fantastic. And yours truly, Nicholas Allen Baugh and Bo Rude, we had some fun with this one. We had said that we were going to do cigars and drinking whiskey to honor Jordan while doing this pod, and we did it. We took our act outside of my podcast room and went out into my back patio. We fired up the cigars, we got the whiskey going, and we broke it all down. This was a blast. Certainly a lot to talk about with Michael Jordan and this Last Dance documentary and the finale. So without further ado, let's get to it. Nick Bob Bo Rude recapping the Last Dance episodes 9 and 10. All right, here we are. We are not in the pod room. We are on my back, kind of like patio, because my wife said we can't smoke cigars in the house. But who the boss now, wifey? Hey. Who the boss now,
take
wifey?
Take you outside, but they can't take the cigar from your mouth. You know what I'm saying, man?
Bo Rude, Nick Bob, we are, and we'll put some pictures up as I spit out a little bit of my cigar. We each have big-ass fat cigars. We each have some whiskey on the rocks. I do have, and we'll be able to see it, I have a baseball bat in honor of the moment the male species peaked when Jordan was holding a bat, smoking a cigar, talking about the art of talking trash. And we are recapping the Last Dance. It's all over. We just watched it, and here we are. Dude, I mean, I got to tell you, I haven't smoked a cigar in 10 years. This isn't half bad, my friend.
It's fun. It's been a long time. It is the perfect way, though, to cap off 5 weekends in a row during quarantine.
Yes.
That we have got to spend doing something we absolutely loved.
This has been incredible, as my dog Kobe barks because there's a little Scott Burrell over there barking, so Kobe's going to bark at him. Telling you people, this is how it's happening. This is good, though. I mean, we've been talking about this for about like the third or fourth episode of like, listen, do we have to do a recap on all this while smoking a cigar and drinking some whiskey?
Yeah, I think once we saw like Jordan was so openly making whiskey and stogies a part of his documentary, we figured, well, we better make that a part of our pod at some point. And it kind of worked out perfectly. A nice afternoon recap.
This is great. So we're recording this on a Monday afternoon. It's about 4:45. We apologize if the sound quality isn't as good as the normal pod room. Again, we are outside, so you might hear dogs barking, as we just heard Scott Burrell, the dog, was barking. You might hear there might be someone that fires up mowing the lawn, but it's over. I mean, I think a part of the fact that I'm glad that we're doing things that can, you know, stimulate our minds is dealing with the fact that documentary is officially done. We just finished episodes 9 and 10. And so you and I usually talk about how we want to structure this stuff. You know, the final two episodes were all about 97 and all about 98. And they jump back and forth how they usually do it. But we decided, let's just talk about all of 97, the stuff that jumped out of us at us, then all 98, and then we'll put a bow on this thing. I hope my cigar's not going to go out, will it?
No, you'll be good.
Good thing you knew to cut the cigar. You said, Nick, do you have a cigar cutter? I was like, what do you mean, like scissors?
What do you mean? We use a knife, everybody. We use a knife.
We use a knife to cut that you use to cut like strawberries. Okay, so 1997. I think the first.
Where did they even start in the from the 97? Like, where was the first flashback?
You know what's funny is they didn't even the whole 97 season.
They didn't go they just went
to the finals.
I think they said, because that's what we, remember the last episode we said, how are they going to fit it all in these two? And basically they said, we're 97, we're going right to the finals, and that's that.
Which is great because there's a lot in there. I think there's a couple of big things. I think, you know, and we'll get at the end of like our big questions, talking about everybody that was involved in the documentary and like how we view them, what we learned, all that stuff. I wouldn't say there wasn't anything we learned that was totally new other than the flu game wasn't necessarily the flu game. It was the food poisoning game.
And if you're reading between the lines from Tim Grover, his trainer, his buddy that's always with him, that were in the room at the time, Jordan wanted pizza. They order a pizza. Five guys show up to deliver it. And anybody that's ever gotten a pizza that knows that you've never had more than one person ever deliver
never.
Pizza. So the conspiracy now is, did these five guys from the pizza place do something to that pizza? I don't know what you do to make sure he gets food poisoning. I don't know if you throw it on the floor or what you do, but they, you could see without them saying it, they wanted to say, we got set up.
Because there's a lot – because Tim Grover, the trainer, said that the second that pizza got there and there were five guys there peeking in, all that stuff, he immediately – like his intuition perked up like, I don't – this isn't good. And Jordan said he ate the entire pizza. Only him, which is just one of the amazing things about this documentary is just the amazing fact that, like, you know, you would assume these top-level athletes are like – hydrating and kind of, like this dude is smoking cigars, eating whole pizzas in the NBA finals. Like it's incredible. But
I think one of my favorite moments of the whole episodes of the two episodes is where they're talking about Jordan as a guy who lives in the moment all the time. And he's like jamming out on the bus. He's making jokes on the way to the arena. He walks on the floor. He tells everybody, I drank two beers already today.
Yes.
Smoked a cigar, played the piano, and it's game night. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, in same way you're talking about the pizza, like, but like he's Michael Jordan. Like he worked hard, he trained hard and everything, but he's also Michael Jordan. He can eat a pizza before the game. He can smoke a stogie. He could probably have a couple of beers and it doesn't matter because he's Michael Jordan.
I think that's, and we'll get more into this in like what made Jordan Jordan, but I almost think that rare air author made that point of like what made him special was he was one of the few people that could be fully present in the moment. And think about it, when you're fully present in the moment, you're not held back by anything that's happened in the past, and you're not paralyzed by anything that could happen in the future.
Yeah.
You're only thinking about what's happening now.
Yeah.
And that is good for an athlete
It's good for clutchness. Things like when it comes to pressure situations, the people that can live in the moment are the best, and the people that are thinking about what they're going to write tomorrow are the ones that usually – get scared, buckle up, or don't want to be – like they want to pass that rock and get away from it. And Michael was the guy that was like – his mindset was like, how can you be worried about tomorrow if you haven't taken the shot yet?
But what's weird about that – and let's just go there with it, and then we'll get back to the pizza in a second. But like one thing that's weird about that, though, is somehow he was able to – but yet he was confident because of what he had – so like a part of being present, though, is to not forget about – like you still have to remember the past because the past is how you gain confidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's able to, while he's able to, as Bo lights the cigar back up, we're already struggling here. He was able to be present, but still remember the past and be confident about and like reference those things, which is just, I don't know. Like I think there was elements of that were interesting to me, but I think it goes to show you, like the night before the NBA Finals, like he's just, I bet he was playing cards with Gus, his boy, who became a father figure to him. That was a great storyline too. But I think he just wanted a pizza. It didn't matter. Like, should I not? He's just like, yeah, I just want a pizza.
But he was up every night anyway playing cards, you know, like staying up late. Like those guys, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around these guys that are so talented that they don't need to get their sleep, eat perfectly, hydrate. It's like another level of talent that I'm, you know, unless you are that, you probably don't understand that mindset.
Dennis Rodman
skips practice to go to the WCW for a night.
Like, think about that. In the middle of the NBA Finals.
In the middle of the Finals.
I don't. It's unbelievable. But, okay, so time out. You know, I guess just first of all, does it alter anything to you that the flu game wasn't really the flu? He didn't have the flu.
That doesn't matter.
It might be worse.
I think food poisoning could be worse in a 24-hour span than anything else. I'd rather have
just like the flu than food poisoning. Have you ever had really bad food poisoning?
I've had it maybe twice in my life, and it was brutal. I'm talking brutal. Like, you can't do anything. So for him to play in the NBA Finals and play almost every minute, I think it was 44 total minutes he played, and it's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
But that's Michael Jordan. He has that ability to, and it's showed in this documentary, to compartmentalize. He's there. Even in between timeouts is when he just does it, and as soon as – you know, the whistle blew for the timeout, his body would just shut off and go dead.
I mean, and here's the thing with him. Like, you can tell when someone's really hurting. Like, the body language, the look on his face, like, he was hurting.
Yeah.
And he's also one of those guys, like, he's the kind of guy that is show the opponent no weakness. Like, he's – some guys want to ham that up, yeah, you know, and, like, dramatize it and play it up. That's not – Jordan, you could tell, was, like, a pathological, maniacal, like, I don't want to give my opponent any sort of confidence at all.
Yeah.
So showing bad body language and all that stuff, that's not in his DNA whatsoever. So the fact that, like – all I know is you – right now, if you just gave me a bunch of images – of Jordan in games, and it could be just from throughout the 1997 season, and said, point at the games where he has the, like, it's the flu game and not, you'd easily be able to point out the games that he had the flu, because you can just see it on him.
Yeah, you could see in his eyes. He was like, oh my God, I'm hurting here.
You can see it on him. Oh, this cigar, boy. I've never felt cooler. We're struggling here. We're having to relight up. It's a little windy in here. It's a little on the windy side. Maybe Jordan was right all along. Maybe the meaning of life, compete your ass off, play to win, smoke a cigar, talk a little smack. This is just fantastic right now. But the – because I've heard some people – I've tried to avoid spoilers because we wanted to watch this together on Monday instead of on Sunday. And – there's some people acting like they don't buy the food poisoning story. But my question is, like, well, what do you think? I don't understand.
Are they saying that Michael was doing something else that night?
I don't know.
And those guys are covering for him?
Yes. That's it. That's the sense I get, is some people think something else was at play. Because I remember for a while, there was a big rumor going around for a while that Jordan, the flu game was actually Jordan was hungover.
It's not out of the question.
Not necessarily, but
you hear Mike before another game said, I had a couple beers this morning.
Like, would it surprise you that Jordan, and it's crazy to say this, the greatest basketball player of all time, the greatest athlete or competitor of all time, the night before an NBA Finals game, would it surprise you the cars started flowing, they got out the drinks and all that stuff, and before you know it, he had too many? I don't know, maybe, but...
I don't see him having that effect. Like, that, the effect that he had on him wasn't I'm hungover. It was I'm hurting.
Right.
And everybody that's been hungover, you know, a few hours later, you get up, you can work out. It doesn't make you look like you're like hurting. It's just like, hey, this kind of sucks. But if Jordan was a guy that would do drugs at some point in his life, I would say, hey, maybe he did some drugs and but that's not Michael Jordan. He's more like a whiskey and stogies guy than he is try experimental drugs.
But I think then the other side of it is it's entirely plausible. And the thing that's crazy is this is one thing I was trying to figure out with everything. For five different people to come to deliver the pizza, it almost, you almost think, did Jordan, like, did, when they ordered the pizza, because sometimes you got to give a name and all that stuff, like, did they order this pizza in Salt Lake City, Utah, under Michael Jordan's name?
No way. So there's no way they did that. So the people that he's with, they've been around the block enough that they probably do the ordering, but my guess is that they said, hey, here's a pizza. It was late at night where they're like, this is the hotel the Bulls are staying at.
Maybe you're right, and they thought, you know what?
I bet you this is Jordan or somebody, right?
Or they just thought, like, or maybe, like, it just was freak coincidence. Because, like, I think the thought is, like, did this pizza place intentionally sabotage this pizza? Or sometimes you get food poisoning. Like, sometimes it just, like, could have been a freak accident.
The five dudes showing up with the pizza is beyond weird.
There's something about that is... But I guess, like, right now, like, if you have to pen me down, I got to take the last dance witness stand and said, do you believe the story? I do.
I do.
I do.
Michael seems like, if Michael wouldn't just make up a story and say it on a documentary, Michael's a type would just not talk about it if it wasn't true.
Or here's the other thing. The one thing. Now, I didn't do this a ton because I was a model citizen in high school. You know what I'm saying? I ain't do nothing wrong. But the one thing you found, the few times that I maybe did get in trouble in high school, what's the one thing you realize when you're – the story you tell, less is more. You don't have too many details because the more details, the greater chance of – a discrepancy, you know, like, so if, you know, there's been night, right? I mean, I'm sure you snuck out in high school. We snuck out and did something, like, you know, there's always that, okay, what are you telling your parents?
Yeah.
And all it is we were at
so-and-so's house.
We were at Jake Mulazin's house.
Watching a movie.
That was it.
Yeah, like, that was it.
You don't be like, we went to Jake's house and then we went to Taco, we went to Amigos, and then Bo got a number three and I got a number four, but Bo said he actually wanted a number two. You don't, because then there's a greater chance of, like, you getting caught in an inconsistency.
And you can just tell when somebody's telling you something, the more they say, the more you don't believe them.
So, I guess my point is, let's say this pizza food poisoning story is not even true. Jordan would just say, yeah, I had the flu. I just woke up in the middle of the night. I had the flu, and that was it. Like, you wouldn't go into a pizza thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think I believe that story.
Well, they're clearing it up. It's called the flu game, but it's, you know, stomach flu or food poisoning are kind of linked. It's the same thing,
food,
right?
Yeah, right.
So food, it was never the food poisoning game. It was always the flu game.
Well, like you said, the flu can be the stomach flu or the regular flu. Like, you know, and that's all. I bet the Bulls just said Michael Jordan's having flu-like symptoms. Oh, it's Bo. You already, boy, that's where it starts. After one whiskey, that's where it starts.
Where it starts,
that's
with
where
the
it
whiskey.
Starts. Take a good man to talk shit after one whiskey.
After two whiskeys?
After two whiskeys.
I respect that man.
But
you got some work to do, my friend.
I do have some work to do, but I like this stogie right here. But that's an amazing game. It's an amazing game, an amazing performance, where he dug deep inside himself for that and put on one of the – like, it's the flu game. When we write down, you know, the 89 Cavs shot, 91 – oh, a spectacular move by Michael Jordan. You know, switching hands. Then we have the shrug. Then we, you know, like, all, like, the flu game is one of the 5 to 8 moments in Jordan's career.
Probably the most impressive feat of will of his.
Yes.
Probably was. I mean, that's one that you just go to perform at the level that he performed with not just nothing in the tank, like, you're, like, negative in the tank.
Right.
It's like your body's working against you. It's,
right.
It's shutting
you're
you
down. You're dehydrated. You haven't kept – you've thrown up everything. You've all that stuff. But with – so with that final series, let's back up. And this really – like, when I talk about this, I need to grab my baseball bat as I'm physically grabbing my baseball bat. How about the story of – when Jordan is retired and the Jazz are playing the Bulls, And he goes to the facility to say hi to Stockton and Malone. And little dumbass Byron Russell talks smack to Jordan. Why'd you have to leave? Why'd you have to quit? Why'd you? Because you know I could guard you, all this stuff. And Jordan said, after that point, he made the list. You and I both said, like, because there, you know, there's always been a sometimes I've had these moments where I'm like, you know, wow, like, think if you're Russell, like, what do you think if you're Byron Russell? You are, like, known for, like, on your tombstone, it would basically say, here lies Byron Russell. Yes, that Byron Russell that got his ass crossed up in the most iconic shot in NBA history.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an element of, like, you kind of not – don't feel bad for me. Like, God, that's just, like, wow. Like, imagine your life is remembered by that. But, like, for some reason, hearing that story made me lose all – any – whatever
– sympathy.
Sympathy,
yeah.
I was going to have for him went out the window.
Because people don't learn. And I don't know if – here's what I don't know. There's these stories over and over and over again of people talking smack to Mike, which is what the one thing you don't do. And I don't know if that's because Mike eggs it on, because Mike's talking smack.
Right.
Or if people, just because it's Michael, it's you're just so enamored with him and so excited to have a chance to banter with him, that you just say, I'm going to talk.
Maybe this is what he wants.
This is my way to interact with Mike, so I'm going to talk that smack, but... What people never learned is, like, you just can't do it.
If you want
to compete and beat him, you can't do that.
I just can't believe that what we thought about him in this documentary has been confirmed from the standpoint of this guy was an assassin. Like, he is Steve Buscemi in Billy Madison with a list of people to kill. And whatever happened to piss him off, like, if you made the list, you were going to go down, period. Right?
I think that's what kept him, the weirder his life got.
Yeah, maybe that simplified things for
the
him.
The weirder, like, things got with fame and fans and everybody trying to get a piece of him and him just almost not even being, he'll never get to live a normal human life again. I think he went more into the littlest thing his competitors said to him. He took such little offenses to as part of his motivation. That was his way of keeping it all on the level for him or something.
As Bo, I got to announce people. Bo pulled in some more whiskey in his glass, so shout out to Bo Rude right now. But I think you're right from the standpoint of, like, also – I should have brought more ice down here. That's my bad. Rookie mistake.
No, you're good.
Scott Burrell mistake here.
Scott Burrell, if I ever see
Scott
you,
Burrell,
again,
if I ever see
your
you,
ass.
I'm going to whip your ass. It's going to be a barroom brawl. But I think when you're on the mountaintop, like, you almost have to manufacture things to keep yourself sharp, you know? And for him, a conversation that happened 3 years, 2 years prior with Byron Russell was enough for him to be like, yep, this is it. This is what's going to ignite the fire for this series.
But he was looking for it. Mike was looking for those moments. That's what people, fully grasped, is how much, as much as he was bigger than everybody else, even if you were Byron Russell, who was not anybody special, Mike was looking for you to do that. That's what he needed that. And these people thought that they were getting a banter with Michael, and all they were doing was giving him what he needed, which was that little bit to store in his mind to give him motivation in 2 years to go out there and actually give it his all.
Do you – and I want to stay focused, but I wanted to ask you this. Because one of the things I've been thinking about – I don't know why I've been thinking about this – is how this would impact me if I watched this when I was – if I watched this documentary when I was 13 years old, 16 years old, 20 years old, and I still was – playing.
And so this is a good stream of thinking here, okay? Because
have you been thinking about that too? Or
well,
what, like?
So here's what I've been thinking. The more I watch this, this is very different than what most people try to. The stories the modern players are trying to tell. There's a whole generation of young kids that their attitudes are going to change forever. Now,
right? That's where it's
and tough. I think we might have some tougher. some tougher kids coming up, legitimately just from watching this video.
Okay.
From this documentary.
I pour some more whiskey. That's where it starts.
That's where it starts.
You know what I'm saying, though?
I do. But and the reason I totally agree, but one of the things that I was thinking about back in my, like as I referenced in my athletic career, however small it was, when I was going to compete, I didn't think like Jordan in the sense that like I didn't, when I went to play against Lincoln High or against Iowa State or against Southern Illinois, I wasn't thinking, this guy, like I'm going to prove like a individual thing, like I create individual things. Like in some ways, team sports has kind of taught you to like, don't make it about you. It's about just winning. And I wonder if a part of me wonders if I maybe missed the boat on that, or I don't know. I thought there's something interesting to be said on like what motivated.
Who is the best player in middle school?
Tyron Camby.
Tell me you did not have, have him on
you.
You know what I mean?
Prove that.
That was a personal. So I think
maybe subconsciously. Yeah. Maybe
here's the difference. I think when it comes to being like a great player, or going against a singularly great player, that's where you take those things on. Like the person that becomes like the one guy that challenges you, I think that's where those things happen. A lot of times with some team sports, and I felt like this in college football a lot of times, there wasn't always a guy on the other team that I was really concerned with. But occasionally, like Chase Daniel was one that I was like specifically like, I don't want to give Chase Daniel. Chase Daniel was kind of on my list. But it wasn't always the case. But when we went against Adrian Peterson, I was like, I got to be laser focused on this guy. Only this guy can't get by me. Or this, you know. So that was usually was like the special guys made you go to that place.
I guess.
I don't know. With a lot of team sports, so I think it's more just like do your job. Football is a lot of just
do your job. But as a team, like I think back to, you know, like when we would play high school football, high school basketball, or when we played in the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament Championship game, like I wanted to win those games just because I wanted I wanted to win. Like I wasn't as concerned.
I agree, but if they had a Michael Jordan on their team and you had to guard him, you would have been somewhere else on, like, that person. I don't know. Yeah. I think something changes with, like, the really good players that you have to face. But I do know what you mean. Overall, with team sports, I more thought about the game in its entirety.
Yes. And so, yeah, like, I'm thinking I just have thought a lot about what motivated me when I played and why, and you know, like I've just thought of this documentary has caused me reflect on that a lot.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know if, but I also think when it comes right down to it, we weren't wired quite like Jordan was wired. But the one thing is true is revenge. We owe these guys. These guys beat us last year. Or they beat us last time we played and we owed them. That stuff is real. But I always viewed it through like a team lens.
I bet you, but here's what
but
I
maybe,
would,
maybe,
here's what
sad
I argue
is like,
with.
It's hard to remember exactly what you were thinking like 15 years ago.
I don't remember exactly what I was thinking. I also think Michael paints the picture. That's all he was thinking. I think that's later in his career. I bet you when he was at North Carolina in his first handful
of
years,
you're right,
it was a little bit less like that. But it's also when it's the NBA and it's your job, you're trying to find motivation some for 82 games or a hunt. It's different when you got a limited amount of games. So if you asked Michael Jordan in college how he felt, I think it would have been different.
That's a great point because I doubt like in the 82 finals he wasn't like Patrick Ewing. I'm going to show people there's a difference between me and Patrick Ewing before. Like I bet he wasn't thinking
the
like that.
The search for motivation in high school, college, you don't need it because you get 20 or 30 games a year. So
right.
It's every game matters. Every game is so important that the game speaks for itself. 84 game seasons for 15 years. That's where guys have to
find reasons. Yeah. Okay,
and Mike, that's how Mike did it. I think.
Let me bring it back to. We took an exit. Now we're getting back on the ramp.
98, right?
No, 90. I want to say with 97 real quick because I think I want to talk about Steve Kerr for a second. Hey, guys, quick break to talk to you guys about Pella Windows and Doors. And I want to make sure that you guys understand that Pella Windows of Omaha and Lincoln, they're following CDC guidelines during this coronavirus situation. They can safely serve any of your window and door needs in the showroom or in your home. All the employees at Pella and the customers are completing a COVID-19 questionnaire as provided by the CDC prior to entering the showroom, entering the office, and any potential customer's home. And all the employees are required to self-quarantine for a recommended 14 days if that individual comes into contact with someone who's tested positive, if they traveled anywhere outside of the Omaha-Lincoln area. Bottom line, they are taking all the necessary precautions to make sure that they are safe and you are safe so you can safely move forward with your window and door needs. And on top of all that, as a result of all this stuff with the coronavirus, Pella is offering temporary special financing options. They are now available. So, man, now is the time to take advantage of these special rates and put that value back into your home, and you have that peace of mind knowing that all the necessary safety protocol and precautions have been put into place by Pella, so you know the whole time you can feel safe. Give Pella a call, 402-493-1350, or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com, because I think Kerr ended up being a pretty instrumental part of this, of the final, like, three-ish episodes. Steve Kerr became like a big part of, like, Kerr was a huge part of their last three-peat.
Yeah.
And, you know, with Kerr, there's a, you know, you and I were talking, I'm not so sure there's not like a more interesting basketball person to talk hoops with than him. When you think about all that, like, he was with Jordan and won three titles. Then he goes to the Spurs with Pop, a different dynasty, wins two titles. And then he's the coach of the Golden State Warriors. As my wife looks down at us as she's laughing at what we're doing right now. Don't act like you're not impressed, honey.
I've never seen your wife more impressed with you right now.
That's where it stopped, baby. That's where it stopped. But with Kerr, He's seen so many different sides of basketball excellence that, like, when he talks, it is fascinating to me. It's crazy how you don't think about, like, such a horrible event that, like, his dad was not murdered, he was assassinated.
I somehow missed that story all these years. That was unbelievable, unfathomable that happened to his dad.
That was emotional to listen to. Like, when Kerr really opened up about his dad, that was like, your boy. See, the problem is when I watch stuff with you, you make it so I have to man up. I have to man up. But I was getting a little misty-eyed with that. But, like, that's an unbelievable story, that his dad was shot, and then how his escape from, you know, thinking about those things, or really, like, was he just poured himself into basketball.
Yeah.
And it was cool to hear. What I thought was really cool, what Kerr talked about, was how much he learned from Paxson. Like, he picked John Paxson's brain, not on how to, it wasn't like necessarily how to, like, be a good basketball player. It was all in the lens of, what do you have to do to be on Michael Jordan's good side and earn his trust and help him? Which was really cool.
That's a weird, isn't that amazing thought? Like, what do you got to do to earn Michael's trust? Like, what do you got? Like, Michael, like, to go into battle with Michael, here's what you got to do. Like, that's the standard he held people to on his team. Like, if you want to go, like, to earn the right to compete with me, you got to do this.
Because I bet, like, I just wonder how applicable that is to other things. Like, you were drafted by the Patriots. I wonder if rookie tight ends, when they were coming in to the Patriots, had to pick Gronk's brain on, like, what is Brady like? What do I need to do to, like, you know?
But that's on those players, though. So
right.
The thing is, like, you can't make a guy want to be, like, in that role, right? Steve Kerr, before he was on the Bulls, saw Paxson and knew, that's the job for me. That takes foresight, right? And you got to, like, put yourself out there.
Well,
And I think what you just said speaks to my favorite thing about Steve Kerr, and it's I'm not sure there's a guy that has greater self-awareness than Steve Kerr and greater humility than Steve Kerr from the standpoint of like what you just said, like he saw like, okay, this is the here's the guy, like this is my role. This is what I need to try to do. How can I maximize in that? And even when he talks about himself, he doesn't, I mean, this is a guy, Bo, that won 5 championships, hit huge, like championship winning shots that we're about to get to into in a second. And he, and this guy doesn't like, he doesn't have you know, you talk to old players and they always want to, and I maybe was like this. I've been impressed with you over the course of your post-football career is you've been comfortable in your own skin about who you were as a player. I'm sure you've been around certain players that want to puff up their chest like, hey, well, you know that I did this and I did that and I was pretty good. You've always had this comfort about you that I admire. Like you've never, ever puffed up your chest and been like, well, you know, I was first team All Big 12. Well, you know, I was drafted by the Patriots. Well, you know, I did do this. I did do that. Like you've never had that, which I admire. And Kerr could puff up his chest, but Kerr has always had a humility about him that I always really, really admire and appreciate.
Yeah. Kerr is, and I think the more you learn about his family, you know, his family's a bunch of, that was a teacher, professor at UCLA. His mom's right. A professor as well. Like, so a family of academics. I mean, it makes a lot of sense with how thoughtful he is about everything.
Right.
You name the topic, and
he
Steve,
can.
Like Steve Kerr could be a good president someday. I'm convinced of it. He's like a right. really. He's just a really thoughtful guy. But you know, I don't know where that comes from, with Kerr. In terms of just like. The humility he has, but it must have came from his parents.
It's amazing. But then one of my favorite, and I've seen the clip a million times, but it's still so cool to see it again. One of my favorite all time behind the scenes thing in sports, and obviously in this documentary, the huddle in game 6 of the 1997 finals, where Jordan with the Gatorade cup real close to his face and the towel kind of over his head turns to Steve Kerr and gives him that look like, hey, they're coming off me. Be ready. And Kerr jokingly said he was like, okay, Michael, I'll be ready if they come out, if they come
way
off
to
you.
Be discreet.
Way to not give it away or whatever. But and then it comes to fruition. Like Jordan, one of the things that is amazing is, and Jordan even talked about it after the fact on like the end of his career, I'm not so sure the mental side of Michael wasn't greater than the physical. How there wasn't any scenario, situation, look, moment that he hadn't seen before and didn't know exactly how to handle it and what to do. And he knew in that moment in the NBA Finals, I mean, think about this. This is like a huge timeout. And he's has the foresight and the intuition and the instincts to turn to Steve Kerr, who's never been in this moment, and say, hey, you, it's your time. Be ready. Like, he basically, he was Bran Stark from Game of Thrones and saw it. Like, they're going to come double me.
I'm the one-eyed raven.
I'm the one-eyed raven. And it's coming to you, and it comes. Jordan's, you know, pivots through the double, hits Steve Kerr, and there are a lot of swishes in this world. That was a swish. That's one of my favorite, because I love Steve Kerr, but that's just one of my all-time, like, everything about that sequence and who's involved is, it's the cool part about sports is, like, you have this alpha greatest of all time needing the little engine that could, that always had to overcome and maximize and prove his stripes, earn his wings. I think Jordan even said it, I think, like, Steve Kerr earned his wings tonight. Like, all coming together to win his fifth championship.
Well, it's the moments, the Paxson shot and the Kerr shot are the two plays in Jordan's career that you pointed to Michael Jordan as the guy that became the ultimate winner when he learned to trust his teammates, right? That's the part that, like, sort of completed the Jordan narrative, that, like, it wasn't just Michael scoring Michael. It was Michael elevating everybody and Michael trusting teammates and making them better too.
Absolutely. And then Kerr's at the championship parade or championship press conference. That's hilarious. That's Jordan. You know, Michael's not too comfortable in these spots. I'll have to bail out Michael. It's great. All right, you ready to go to 1998?
Let's do it. Nick, this is the last dance of our Last Dance podcast.
Will you do this with me once a week? Smoke a stogie and drink whiskey and just talk to me? Because this, I got to tell you, this is fantastic.
We're getting down to the nub, though.
We are. This goes faster than I thought. Jordan was smoking a stogie that was, like, laughably enormous at the end of the documentary. So let's get to 98. So all we got really in 98 and in these two final episodes was the Pacers series and the Jazz series. Anything with the Pacers series jump out at you?
So for me, it's what stood out, I think, of all these competitors that Michael has gone against, I think Reggie Miller is by far the most underrated.
Totally agree.
Reggie Miller, I would argue, is the most fearless of all those competitors. Like Reggie's confidence was almost eye-opening how, like, it almost didn't matter that Michael was Michael. Reggie was going to be Reggie. Reggie's not as good as Michael. Reggie's not as physically talented as Michael. But Reggie was not afraid of Michael, like
right.
I think some guys were.
Right.
And I don't think Reggie got rattled
like that
by
aura Michael. That because there was a – there got by the second three-peat, in particular 90, 96, 97, and 98, like, there was a psychological advantage that Jordan had over everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting that Stockton said – I love Stockton's answer about that, too. Is like, I don't know how you're supposed to compete against someone if you are in awe of them.
Yeah.
Which is very true, but I'm with you. Reggie maybe more so than any other –
somebody that went head-to-head against him. It was like
– guarded him.
I think everybody that guarded him or, like, truly, like, went sort of head-to-head with him, I think they backed off.
Yes.
I mean, even Barkley at some point – gave him his best shot and went, I can't beat Michael. I don't think that Reggie ever conceded.
No. And those two had a thing. Like they went back and showed some old clips of them going at it and wanting to fight, and those two had a thing, and I thought it was interesting, and Jordan's not one of them to blow smoke. Like, in terms of teams out of the East, he said outside of Detroit, Indiana pushed us more than anyone else did. And one of the things that I thought Reggie put well is the moment in Game 7, the Pacers were up 5, I think, or either up 3, and the Bulls win a jump ball. It gets tipped. Jordan wins the jump ball against Rick Smits. And as I choke on my smoke. And it gets tipped to Pippen. Pippen gets it to Kerr. Kerr wets a 3. Oh. And it was a rout. And Reggie made the point that he thought the championship pedigree and championship experience really shine through there. And what's interesting, Coach Self was on my pod. And Coach Self said, talent trumps everything. He goes, I even think talent trumps experience. But in situation, like in a series, I think experience almost trumps things. And I thought it was, I felt like that moment really kind of, and Reggie put it perfectly, that moment really showed kind of like the experience, the fact that this team had won 5 championships and they were ready for that moment. And then in the final 6 minutes when it was winning time, they showed who the champs were. And as Jalen Rose put it, they looked like a 9th grade JV team going against varsity.
It's that know-how. The teams that know how to do it can overcome a more talented potential team.
Right.
I don't know if the Pacers are more talented. They may have been I don't know that they were better that year, but it was close. I mean, they were a deep team. I mean, you could argue they had a more physical team.
Rick Smits,
the Davis brothers were not brothers, but they might as well have been brothers.
Yeah.
They those guys were big,
big physical,
and physical and tough. And then you got Reggie, Mark Jackson, Jalen Rose,
and I mean, Chris Mullin, and even and Chris Mullin. Mullin's
Hall of Famer.
Yes,
I mean, that's a deep eight, man.
That's a really
eight.
Good squad right there. And they dig deep. They win in seven. And I do. We got to give a quick shout out. What a great. See, this is what I love so much, what I'd been disappointed in up until these final two episodes was, remember, the whole premise of this documentary was a film crew was granted unprecedented access in the final season. And really, up until these final two episodes, we didn't get a ton of amazing behind-the-scenes stuff. I feel like these final two episodes, we got a ton of great behind-the-scenes stuff. And one of those great moments was, and I'd never seen this, I don't know if you had, Bird, who is coaching the Pacers.
That's the reason why you haven't seen it.
Bird, who's coaching the Pacers, and Jordan embraced kind of in like some hallway after the game. And what he said, fuck you.
He says, fuck you, bitch.
Fuck you, bitch. And
to Larry, and Larry loved it.
I mean, just loved it.
Larry loved it. I mean, it's only Mike and Larry can have that moment where they're both crazy competitors, and they can have that, and that's their way of saying, like, I love you, man, great game.
That's their language of, I respect you, I love you.
And Mike told him, go work on your golf game. And Larry loved me. That's what real competitors, if you get beat by somebody that you respect and, like, you're kind of friends with, but, like, super if they tell you go work on your golf game, yeah, it stings a little bit, but you kind of go, yeah, I'll give you that one. You earned it.
Jazz, 98. Where do you even want to start? What before we get to the greatest final 41 seconds probably in basketball history?
I think it's important to note, like, that Jazz team got better. Like, so they
even though they got that ass kicked in
97.
Was that in 97 when they lost by like 40 in game, or was that in 98?
That was in 98 as well, but it was a better Jazz team, and it was they point out, like, it was a good series except for one game where they got smoked.
And that's basketball, though. Yeah. Sometimes that can happen.
And
like,
you wave the
flag
and say, let's.
To me, that's why in basketball you have to play a series.
Yeah,
that's why you have to play a series. But
we're missing one. Did Jordan hit a shot
in 97 over Russell?
97, okay.
When he made the list, and he just gave the solo fist pump.
Okay. So in the first,
they lost at Utah in game one.
Lost at Utah, then they won three straight?
Yeah, because one of the things that I forgot about that series was the Jazz. If you know how good the Jazz team was, they won game five down 3-1 in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Where Chicago, I mean, this is Chicago, this is the Bulls, this is Jordan. They went to the United Center and beat Chicago, where they had the champagne there, they had the rings there, not the rings, but, like, you know what I mean. They had everything on ice ready to celebrate a title, and the fact that they went to Chicago and beat them is a window into how good this team was. Mm-hmm. And the big thing with that finals, there are a couple things. You have the unbelievable fact that, and it was a little confusing, and I at one point I had to pause and I had to ask you. Rodman went in between game three and game four, skipped a practice in the NBA finals, and went and did a WCW event, a WWE a wrestling event, where he was with Hulk Hogan on TV in the ring. At one point is hitting Diamond Dallas Page with a chair. The NWO, D-Generation X, all that stuff. I mean, that's amazing that happened.
And it's funny. It's almost like that carried into the basketball. Because then him and Malone were mixing it up, and he was, like, flopping around. It was almost like he was playing the heel in a WCW match. And then he was like, remember, then they smacked each other, and he was acting out.
Think if this is the equivalent. And maybe it's not, but I'm going to try to make this stretch. Think of in the middle of the 2016 NBA Finals when the Cavs came back from 3-1 if Draymond in the middle of that series went and did an event with John Cena and like was in the middle of the finals. Like, it's unbelievable.
It's hard to imagine. You can't do that stuff
anymore. And it's hard to imagine that wasn't like, you know, I know Phil had good answers being like, is that a distraction? He's like, no, it's distracting you. We're not distracted. But like, it had to have been a little bit of a distraction.
Well, didn't Phil basically say like he disrespected the team?
Right.
To the team. He told the team. I don't think Rodman was even there when he said that. But he told the team that. But I think the team was also very aware, like, that's Dennis. And I don't think they actually cared that much. Because it's like,
I think they
because they had Michael and they had the titles already, like previously, they knew like, let Dennis be Dennis, as long as he's back, whatever. We're just, the goal is still the goal.
So, and I think they always knew with Rodman, there was this element of Dennis is going to do what Dennis does, but when Dennis, and the game comes, we know what Dennis is going to be able to
truly
bring. And really, Dennis is his whole role was to just guard and foul Karl Malone, try to get under his skin, and that's really it. They didn't need Dennis for anything else. You know what I mean?
And he's a rebounding, like, savant.
So now we got to get into you want to get to game six?
Yeah, let's do it.
So it's amazing all the different things that are at play here for game six. So they had already blown it with a chance to win in game five. So here comes game six. And again, this is still that their game six and game seven are going to be in Utah. So if the Bulls don't win this one, now they got a game seven on the road. Like, who knows? And with all of that, the backdrop is how hobbled Scottie was. Jordan basically had to win game six on the road at Utah by himself.
And the thing that nobody talks about is Scottie was so hurt that
for a while I thought he was kind of being a little like, oh, is he being a wuss? But like,
I forgot that he came back and played.
Yes.
Which shows like the courage and the toughness you want to see.
Even Jordan gave the anecdote of like, listen, I need you out. Just you out here.
Just be out
just
there.
Just be out here.
And that's what's sacrificing. So I respect to Scottie Pippen. But if they don't win that game, they may lose the series because Scottie would probably be out.
I mean, he couldn't move. Like, and again, like anybody that – I don't know if you've had a bad back.
Oh, when the back goes,
I've battled back spasms since my senior year of high school. Like, when your back is locking up, you can't do anything. Like, you can kind of hobble through certain things or whatever. Like, a back, like, you need your back to do everything.
You can't lead the way with a back. You can be out there. You can struggle through, but you can't, like, win a game for your team if your back's locked up.
That's it.
On a bum ankle, you can drag that thing around. And
like
still...
Isaiah in the finals on a bum ankle, like, found a way. You can hobble your way through it, or a bad shoulder or something like that or whatever.
But that back, it's in the middle of everything. And so that made that game six, looking back on it, infinitely more important to win when they had the chance.
Because honestly, now again, in a game seven, as long as Reggie would say, that black cat or black Jesus is over there, like, I'm still betting, like, if you could teleport me back in time and let's say there's a game seven, I'm betting on Jordan. But at the end of the day, there was enough there to kind of go, I don't know. Like, I wonder who Vegas would have favored.
Utah wins game six in Utah, coming back for game seven. That crowd, I'm telling you, that crowd was crazy. That,
well, you saw the little things. The thing was amazing.
Two or three points every,
absolutely,
every game.
The, you know, Phil and those guys had earplugs at times on the court. It was so loud. On the court. So they battle. It's back and forth. And
there's a minute left.
They're down.
I think they're down three with a minute.
They're down three with 41 seconds left.
Yeah.
And what ensues is the greatest 41 seconds from an individual ever in the context of all that's at stake and who it is. They got to get a 2-for-1. They need a quick basket. Jordan, right hand hezzy, gets down the lane. Tongue out, lays it in, cuts it to one. And then again, like I referenced, at this point, Jordan is on just another level of thinking the game, seeing the game, anticipating the game. He understands they're going to post up Malone. Stockton or Hornacek, whoever he was guarding, is going to cut through. And he anticipates, okay, he's been battling Karl Malone so much that he's going to be too focused on just battling Rodman that I have a chance to lay in the weeds, come off my man, and come strip it. He comes and strips it. Now he's got the ball.
Don't call timeout.
Phil, as I love, and I love this, I'm big on, like, don't call, like, why would you call a timeout in that spot? Because you're, like, all you're going to try and do is get the ball to the guy who's got the ball, and you're going to give the defense a chance to set up, all that stuff.
How to double team. Don't give him a chance to double team him.
And Jordan then, left wing, dribble. Scotty or someone cuts through the lane, and it was smart that he let him cut through the lane and then drove off where he just cut.
Yeah.
And crosses him over, freeze. Where do you come out on the whole push? Like, did he shove him? What do you think?
You know, up until watching it again and hearing Bob Costas talk about it, I always assumed it was a push-off, didn't matter, blah, blah, blah. But if you were to say, did the push-off matter and look at it, I don't think it did.
I don't think it did either.
Because he was moving so fast.
He was stumbling.
You could see that the force on the push wasn't – it almost like if you would have removed his hand, he would have been going anyway. And, yeah, he did push off.
There was a little bit of push.
But the force wasn't the thing that moved Russell. And I never had thought about it there until Costa said – he might as well have been a maitre d' at a restaurant just showing him the way. It was a great analogy because you realize, like, that didn't push Russell over. Russell, like, overextending is what put Russell, like, on the ground.
Right.
And Mike just came and stopped on a dime, elevates.
The most picture-perfect, he's.
And why did he hold it, though?
Because he had been short all game and – he thought, I know that's one thing I think about as a shooter, like when you're short, hold your release. When you're short, finish it, hold
snap.
It.
Yep.
And he finishes it, holds it, swish, and in a span of 41 seconds, the guy scores 4 straight points. No one else touched the ball for Chicago. And it still is amazing to me, and this is where you can poo-poo broadcasters and all that stuff. Like, for Bob Costas in the moment to be able to perfectly put into words what you were seeing is pretty amazing, where he said, if that is the final image of Michael Jordan, what an amazing image. And it was. I mean, this is like out of a movie. You know, I mean, honestly, this is the kind I used to say, it, like, what just unfolded is the kind of thing that if you pitched it to Hollywood, you would, like, Hollywood would do it because Hollywood does those Hollywood endings and Nick Ball loves them. But, like, it's almost like too perfect. You know what I mean? Like, okay, so this is the greatest basketball player of all time, winning a 6th championship. He's going to lay up, steal, crossover. You know what I mean? But that's what happened in real life.
So this is the culmination of what we've been talking about this whole 10-part documentary,
yes.
Right? Michael Jordan, the greatest, probably physically gifted basketball player to ever live, the greatest competitor to ever play the game. And then when Michael Jordan's savvy sports knowledge, like, that caught up, and then, like, basically for the whole 90s, he mentally was like, he was the top guy when it came to thinking the game, too. When those things came together, he gave us so many moments. It's hard to describe. He gave us the Hollywood ending because all those things came together.
Right.
So the reason that some people get a 1-part documentary and he gets 10 is because he had all of it. He's the only guy that has it all. He had everything, and it's it's just almost hard to fathom, like, a guy that's that talented, that had that much whatever charisma stuff that he had, and he also had the mind for it too. Like,
right.
It's almost not fair that one person got it all, but he got it all.
It's what makes him the GOAT to me, is that whole sequence. Like, when the situation called for it, not only did he answer, he answered perfectly. Swish, then Stockton misses a shot, loose ball rebound, gets batted around, buzzer, Michael holds up six, ball game. Six championships.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was interesting. I thought it was interesting for them to revisit, and then even the moment where they played, they gave Jordan Jerry Reinsdorf's explanation on breaking up the team and the fact that Reinsdorf told Phil he could come back, all those things. Because it circled back. One of the first things we said, and you can go back, and I urge everybody to go back and listen to our Last Dance recap podcast, was one of the first things we talked about in the pod was just the unbelievable, unfathomable fact that they were breaking this up. And it still is maddening that you wouldn't, because Jordan has the great line. It's one of my favorite lines of his, is when Jordan and Scotty and Jordan are got champagne, they got the championship hat and shirts on in the Utah locker room, and they say they can't win until we quit. And it is unfathomable to me. Like, do I get, like, Dennis was almost toast? Yes. Kerr, you know, had probably gotten to the point where he was going to have some value for some other teams, all this stuff. But, like, how do you not – like Jordan said, you're telling me if you offer all those guys one-year deals to come back and go for seven, all of them go for seven. How – it still is unbelievable that those guys weren't allowed the opportunity, and Jordan wanted to run it back and defend their title and get – championship number seven.
You know, we said this in the beginning, and it circles back to the end of this documentary with Reinsdorf. You could see it in Jordan's face, okay? Reinsdorf's not taking any blame for this. Like, you are the owner.
Yes. How he's gotten a pass with all this is amazing.
In the end, if you want Michael Jordan and you want Phil and you want Scotty, make it happen. And don't tell me all the factors. Like, the reality is you're in control. If you want them, and that's all that matters to you, you would do everything you can to make it happen. Not, you know, sabotage the thing and then say, maybe you could come back now, Phil. Would you want to come back after it was already over? Like, you can't let him have a year of everybody being done,
right,
and then try to, like, tell Phil, we'll do this and keep Jerry Krause. Like, I don't care about Jerry Krause or Jerry. Like, those guys' egos were the reason the Bulls didn't have at least one more year.
Right.
And it would have been worth it.
I don't know. I'm not betting against him.
I'm not betting against him.
But how do you not allow, just for the very principle of all that we hold sacred in athletics and competition and sports, how do you not allow them the chance? If they want to, which they did, how do you not allow them the chance to defend their title?
Self-importance. Those guys thought they were, and their place was more important than something that was bigger than them. They didn't understand that those Bulls teams and Michael and Phil and Scotty, that's bigger than them. And they were caught up in their own little, here's what we're doing moment.
Right.
And in the end, nobody gives a crap about the rebuilding Bulls after that. And you know what? The Bulls are probably going to go a long time and not win again. And that's the sports gods do that. Nebraska football.
There's a little
parallel. Guys, let me tell you something. I feel
parallel there.
I feel the parallel of, like, when you mess with the sports gods, they punish you. And the Bulls haven't won in the last 20 years for a reason.
Well, it's like how the documentary, it's like, you know, this Jordan retired, all this stuff. The Bulls began to rebuild. And everybody in their mind said, and they're still fucking rebuilding.
I don't know that they made the one Derrick Rose season. They got to the Eastern Conference
Finals? They probably got to the
Finals?
Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know that for sure. I mean,
that was the closest they got.
Yeah.
They
had a little moment with Derrick Rose, but like, they've been rebuilding for 22 years.
And you know what? One more title was, you would have been 80% favorites in Vegas probably the next year. Because you know what? People would have came to play with Michael.
Yes.
For one more year. If you can't keep Kerr, which Kerr would have stayed.
Kerr would have stayed.
Who can, like Pippen, somebody would have, somebody would have came.
MJ said, like Pippen, ultimately if everybody was running it back, Pippen would have ran it back.
Pippen had life in him. I mean, it's silly to me.
Okay, to put a bow on it, I want to go through a handful of guys and just kind of like what we learned, what we think about them, anything as we wrap this thing up. I want to start with the guy that I'm not so sure that I didn't gain more respect and admiration for and deem them more important in the whole process of it after watching this, and that's Phil. I walked away from this thinking there's this easy thought that everybody wants to go, Phil. I mean, listen, Phil had Michael Jordan. Who? I mean, how hard was that? Like, I felt like in watching this, it was pretty clear Phil's importance. And even Jordan put it with the whole, that the final ceremony was pretty cool. Yeah. They all wrote down what being on this team meant to them, and then they, like, burned it, and Jordan wrote a poem, and Jordan, and I'm paraphrasing, I wish you wrote down, he said something, he goes, Phil had a way of getting you to kind of believe in and buy into the process of things.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think one of the things you find out in sports is like the results are simply a byproduct of the process. And you have to pay the respect that the process deserves to get the results. Phil got those guys to believe that. And I maybe I just got to feel like I got a hard on for Phil right now, but like I've walked away feeling like, you know what, Phil Jackson, I walked away. I'm not so sure there's a guy that I didn't walk away from this whole documentary with my respect level went up for them more than Phil.
Yeah.
Phil was there was a lot of things trying to pull that thing apart, and Phil, I think, had a bigger hand in keeping that thing together than we want to give him credit for. What do you think of Phil?
He's a special personality type. He's one of those guys that if there's 10 great coaches, 9 of them are wired one way, and then there's a Phil Jackson. Like, he's a unique personality type that I believe works well with big personalities. So there might be coaches that are great with a certain kind of team, like hard workers, grinders, all. I think Phil is uniquely gifted to handle big personalities.
Agree. And
it's his gift.
And one of the things about professional sports is, yeah, sure, the triangle offense and figuring out X's and O's and all that stuff, but like a part of coaching is managing people. And Phil was excellent at that. And I wrote this down. I get it. He had MJ, Pippen, Kobe, and Shaq. But Phil Jackson won 11 championships in a 20-season period from 91 to 2010.
11? Oh, my God. Think about that.
Bo. You can. That's why I prefaced it. You can say, well, he had Kobe, Shaq. He won 11. He doesn't have enough fingers on his body for all his championship rings. Just special, special guy. And that's why part of me is like mad at like how the whole, you know, he came back and he ran the Knicks and all that stuff kind of went. But like.
But that's the Knicks. I mean, that's, you could argue that's the Knicks as much as is him, you know?
Right. Like, but I don't know. Like, I walked away being really, really impressed, and his stature in the Bulls dynasty grew for me.
Yeah. It was funny, even Michael, at the end, he's playing the piano, and these guys are asking questions, and he goes, you know, the Zen thing we're working on right now is like, be here. Like, the fact that Michael's even thinking that tells you, like, that some of that stuff, as much as you know Michael rolled his eyes at it, was kind of getting through to him.
Well, and it might be just like, you know, a convenient narrative. Jordan didn't win until Phil got there. And a part of, like, was hit getting him to realize to give himself to the team, give himself to the process, and realize that he needs these other guys and all that stuff. And that culminated in 91 with Paxson hitting a little shots in the fourth quarter of the game that won the title. Paxson in the shot in 93, Curry hitting the shot in 97, all those things. Sure, we know about the Utah 98 where it seemed like Jordan did that every game. He needed these other guys. He did. And I think Phil's ability got that out of Jordan. So shouts out to Phil Jackson.
For sure. For sure.
Pippen. You know, there's been talks that reports that Pippen hasn't liked how he's been portrayed in The Last Dance. Like, I think Pippen hasn't he hasn't been a huge fan of how everything's been painted.
Because it's all about the 98 season, which is probably like his contract, you know,
dispute
one. Like, so it's probably his, they showed his probably two lowest moments as a teammate have been the focus. The 94,
yeah, didn't come out
coach makes the shot. It's been basically that and the 98 season, which he was sitting out.
He delayed his surgery, so he didn't have to play. And all those things.
Nobody would feel good about
that. Scotty's got to live with that. But, like, I don't know. I mean, Jordan even said it. And some of this stuff is like, I'm just going to take the man's word for it. Jordan said, you know, like, I don't win six. There is no Michael Jordan without Scottie Pippen. I don't win six championships without Scottie Pippen.
They're the dynamic duo. I mean, it is. And I think the – that last game where Scotty's back locks up and he goes out there and Mike says, just, we need you out here. And Scotty was out there and he was making shots, just being
steals,
on the floor,
diving up, setting screens.
That tells you about Scotty and Michael in a way where they were together. It was anything it took to win, and they both had their moments. The flu game and Scotty with his back. I think those are both moments that show those guys for each other. There was never a doubt.
I don't know if they did. I don't know if the documentary did it justice on just how good of a player he was, to be honest with you, because it became kind of Michael. The Last Dance about the 98 Bulls kind of became all about Jordan, but that's obviously how it's going to go. All you have to know is, the greatest duo in basketball history is those two cats. Period. Period. They hit a level in 96 playing with each other and just chemistry and all that stuff. Like, I get annoyed when people disrespect Scotty. You know, like.
Well, I think the biggest compliment you could give Scottie Pippen is, you know, he might not make the top 20 players ever. But when you say, what's the best starting five you could ever put on a floor, a lot of times Scottie Pippen's considered in that starting five because he's the perfect teammate on a great team. Because he plays a role that's just like when you have a guy like Jordan, he's the perfect complement. Well, so it's almost like they found the perfect combination.
Here's how I put
it. With those two.
Here's how I'd put it. To go to the superhero analogy. You could say Scottie Pippen's the greatest Robin of all time.
Yeah.
Which I think he is.
Yeah.
But then there's some people who go, well, wait a minute. There's been these Avengers movies where there's all these superheroes, and you're telling me Iron Man with, you know, Captain America is a better than Robin was to actual, like the literal Batman and Robin. Yeah. And it's like, well, the difference is there wasn't a movie called Robin. Like,
there probably will be soon.
just because we got to spread the love. But like, what I mean by that is, like, he's the greatest Robin of all time because he never played the Batman role. Like, he always played that number two role. You could be like, well, what about KD and Steph and Clay? Or what about Wade and LeBron? Well, at one point, Wade was Batman. And at one point, KD was Batman. Steph was Batman. You know, like,
Scotty was always with Michael.
Always with Michael. So in my opinion, he's the greatest Robin of all time. He's the greatest number two of all time in the literal definition of a number two.
Yeah.
A literal definition of number
two. Yeah, I'm trying to even think in the 60s and 70s, there was never a Celtic or a Laker.
But you have Moses Malone and Dr. J. But, I mean, again, at one point, those guys were both Batmans.
They weren't together that long.
No.
I mean, they won six
Shaq
titles.
And Kobe. Like, both those guys were eventually wore the Batman.
Their problem was that neither of them were willing
wanted
to be Batman.
Right. Neither one of them would be Robin.
Robin, yeah. Yeah. That's exactly. That's why they didn't make. They could have, like, if
Bo, if they would have stuck together and they would have. And
who would have been Robin, though?
Kobe.
Yeah.
Probably. He would have had to have been. I mean, at least because Shaq can't be. Shaq can't
be.
Like, it's just. I don't know. But
Kobe can't be.
But Kobe can't be. So yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I just think, like, the one thing about basketball is, like, the importance of all those intangible things that we talk about and the fact that Pippen was comfortable being that and flourished in that. Flourished in that. And as my wife comes down here one last time and is going to take a picture of us, the problem is my cigar is out. My cigar is out.
That's all right, though. It's good
you
for pictures.
You take one picture of it, baby. Let me get my bat out.
All right.
That's where it starts, right here. That's where it starts. That's where it starts, right there. This is making for a great pod here.
I just got so much ashes on my microphone. All right. To wrap this up, I was going to talk about Rodman and Kerr, but let's get to the man of the hour, and then we'll be done.
Okay.
Michael Jordan. We wanted to go into this thing learning some stuff. Did we learn anything? Did you feel like it was more confirmation? How do you feel about how the –
I learned more about the essence of Michael, the off the floor Michael, the practice Michael, the locker room Michael. That's what I got to see, that sort of that dynamic with him and the people around him that was, man, that was
what made him tick and what made
but it was just that the essence of Michael was way more. He's chirping, he's kind of bantering. He's got a lot of energy, man. Like, his energy was constant, and he was a force of nature kind of all the time. And I felt like that was intentionally withheld from us for 30 years. Like, the NBA said, don't show Michael being Michael. It's show corporate Michael, which Michael has that side to him, right? Corporate Michael's come fly with me, want to be like
Airtime,
Mike.
Yeah, all that,
like,
yeah,
all
right.
The things. I'm doing Gatorade commercials, and I'm selling shoes. But the real Michael Jordan got shown more in this video. And I think even this withheld a lot. But, like, Mike, he likes to mix it up,
talk trash,
gamble, and compete all day long. And that was worth its weight in gold to watch that documentary.
See, what – I agree on all that. Like, I did think we got a window into what he was really like as a person and what made him tick outside of when from North Carolina, 6'6". Outside of that, we got to see that side of him. Did we get to see all of it? Probably not. But, I mean, come on. Who's ever really divulging everything about themselves?
No.
But I think one of the things that is amazing about Jordan from this whole documentary is, like, one of the reasons I think he's had the beyond all of the moments and being at his best when the lights were at its brightest and on the biggest stage, I don't know if there's ever been a player that was more just about winning than he was. Like, we talk about the ultimate competitor and all that stuff, but, like, he was 100% all he cared about. I really don't think he cared about narrative, like where the credit was handed or all that stuff. Now, he may have cared about, like, I want people to know I'm better than Drexler or something like that. But all he cared about was winning. And I think that allowed him to endure, push through, hit different checkpoints, not worry about anything else, because the end goal was winning. Even when Doug Collins is fired, Jordan's average, you know, he had his best year. I mean, think about it. He had his best year, and Doug Collins is fired, and he embraces Phil, buys into Phil, because all he wants to do is win. And one of the things that I wish I could get across to young athletes, and what I want to say to the Creighton guys I'm around or whatever, is when you get older, like I just turned 36 last week, and you reflect on your career or you tell people about your career, one of the realities of those conversations is the only thing people care about is, did you win? Nobody really cares about, well, I averaged 14 a game. Well, did your team win? No, we were three game. We went 13-18, and we didn't make the NCAA tournament. No one cares. No one cares. That's the thing I always want to get across. Like, when I reflect on my career, and I'm sure you're the same, like, all you think about and care about is winning. And I think he understood that better than anyone. And he took no shortcuts in the pursuit of doing that, and he ultimately got there. Now, did he have help along the way? Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. But this is a guy that recognized that, put in the work, combined with all the natural gifts that he had, and you combine all those things, you got yourself the GOAT.
The GOAT.
You got yourself the GOAT, right?
Unarguably, the GOAT.
He is the greatest of all time. So are we wrapping this bad boy up, brother?
Let's wrap it. Let's toast
One last
it.
Drink of whiskey. I'll try and get everyone to cling it. There we go.
To the last dance.
This has been so much fun.
Man.
Shout out to Michael Jordan. Shout out to Chicago Bulls. Shout out to Bo Rude. Before we take this drink, for one final time, to echo into my entire neighborhood, what time is it?
Game time! Woo!
All right, my thanks to Pella Windows and Doors. If you're thinking about a new window or a new front door, now is the perfect time. Give Pella a call at 402-493-1350 or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. We will see you next time on the Nick Baugh Podcast.
Production.